You're listening to the Jason Greger Show, presented by PlayAlberta.ca. Play in Alberta, everything stays in Alberta. Revenues from Play Alberta stay in the province. Can help get the Henday built. Dave, are the Bombers ever going to lose?
You know, the amazing thing about this team is it's not like these guys blow everybody out every week. They just win. And even when they're not at their best, I mean, you know, two of their largest margins of victory over Edmonton a few weeks ago and then last night against Montreal are games that they, you know, didn't look very good for about two and a half quarters. So, you know, I think that's a sign of a very, very good team is when you're not at your best, you can still win. As I was combing through the statistics, preparing for last night's panel, I find every once in a while, I find one of these stats that you just look at and go, wow, how can that be possible? Okay. But here's one on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Last night, they went into that game 8-0, right? And they had given up 11 yards a game more than they gained. They've given up more yards than they've gained, and they're 8-0. Like, how is that possible? And the way it's possible is they give up a lot of yards, but they don't give up a lot of points. They defend the end zone. I mean, it's basically the only explanation for why a team could give up more yards than they've gained and have a perfect record is you're playing perfect situational football, you're winning turnover battles, and on about the 10 or 12 most critical plays of a game, you're winning all or most of them. That's the only way I can explain how a team could actually have surrendered more yards than they've gained and have a perfect record.
Yeah, well, yeah, because you're right. There hasn't been many blowouts, so it's not like they're sitting back and letting teams get score some bonus points late in the game. But you know, no. they got the first punt return touchdown of the season last night, and that obviously seemed to be a difference maker for them. The other thing, Dave, is they played 9 games, 6 on the road. They've only got 3 road games left. They got 6 at home. Like, Bomber fans are probably like, hey, can we see this team live at some point?
It's remarkable. You know, and the other thing is the only team in the league without a bye, you know, and they don't have one this week either. So they're going 10 straight weeks without a bye. It's a very quirky schedule this year. But it's, you know, and look, the Zach Calero streak, you know, since he became a Bomber, is we have never seen anything like that in terms of a guy joining a new team. I mean, they're 26-1 now. If you take out the game that he didn't play at all in at the end of last season and the one that he sat at halftime. You know, a lot of their starters had happened. Milt Stegall and I got into almost a fist fight last night about whether that game should count or not. And he's like, well, if they'd won it, you would have counted it. And I'm like, yeah, I probably would have. But, I mean, I'm not hanging a win or loss on a guy that didn't play half a game, right? So, look, it's a remarkable streak. And these guys, like, we haven't seen even a team, you know, win 3 Grey Cups in a row, but they have not missed a beat. And look, the big difference with these teams, they give up a lot more yards through the air than they used to. Brandon Alexander, their safety, has not played a game yet this year. So I think that's why teams have been able to take the top off that defense a little more than they could in the past. But, you know, look, the defense was kind of absent in terms of its playmaking through 3 quarters last night. Then in the 4th quarter, you get the Jackson Jeffcoat sack. You get the Winston Rose interception. You get the Adam Bigel interception. And that's what their defense does. I mean, they're a playmaking defense. And even when they don't make plays for 3 quarters, they still win.
They have 3 byes in the last half of the season.
Yeah, don't ask me to explain the CFL schedule that includes also the Toronto Argonauts and Hamilton Tiger Cats playing this weekend for the first of 4 times in 5 weeks.
Which is awesome. Some of that, I kind of like that.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, especially for teams that, you know, have a history of nastiness. I mean, you think about that playoff game last year in Toronto, right, where the Argos got in the fights with the Ticat fans and Chris Edwards was suspended. Mm-hmm. That was the game that really set the tone for the conversation in the offseason about how do we get some of these shenanigans out of our game. And, you know, just looking at the numbers so far this year, objectionable conduct penalties are up. And they brought in a rule this offseason that if you got 2 of them, you're thrown out of the game. And so, you know, they gave their officials kind of the mandate to not eliminate warnings for objectionable conduct penalties, but shorten that leash on warnings. And now they've gone one step further because the league has looked at this and said, you know, the Toronto game the other night on Sunday afternoon, Chris Edwards and Winton McManus all took penalties of that sort, you know, late in the game. The league's instruction to its officials from this point going forward is essentially you don't need to warn anybody. You know, you see stuff that qualifies as an objectionable conduct standard, call it. And the coaches are apparently, you know, backing this as well, because they're saying, hey, we're telling our guys, don't try to get away with this, you know, because there's going to be a very short leash on the league for warnings on objectionable conduct. And then guys are going out and doing stuff and getting away with it. So, the coaches are actually in support of this. I don't want to call it a zero tolerance policy, but let's call it a minimal tolerance policy when it comes to this stuff, which is really, I say it sprung up during the pandemic, and a lot of people thought, well, players are so ornery, they missed a season, and but it's continued on into this season, with multiple examples of it.
Dave Naylor from TSN joins us. Dave, COVID not completely gone. Of course, Dave Dickinson will not be on the sideline for Calgary. How is he going to communicate? Because he's not suspended, right? So there's nothing saying if he was sitting in his hotel room or wherever, is he going to be in communication with the sidelines during this game tonight?
You know, I don't know the answer to that question at this time. I know when Kahari Jones had to miss a game with Montreal, he kind of tossed out that he might try to do it. Like there was a call or an interview we had with him, a bunch of, you know, people he did from his home, and he kind of suggested it. And then when we followed it up, they weren't able to actually pull that off. I think part of it may be delays in your television that may not be completely in sync.
Can't you just go on live, like FaceTime with a guy in the cell on the sideline?
Well, how do you know what's happening, though? You got to see the game, right? It would be pretty hard if you can't see the game. And if your game is 5 seconds behind, you know, or 10 seconds behind, or whatever it is in the delay, that was, I think, the issue, if I recall correctly, with Kahari Jones. And John Huffnagel's going to be on the sideline, you know, and they're going to, he's there to support, I guess, Mark Killam, who's going to be the head coach, and Pat Delmonico, the offensive coordinator, and Mark Mueller, the quarterback coach, are all going to call the plays. But what role exactly Dave Dickinson is going to have? I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to figure out a way to do this, because, like, even, you know, yesterday where he was not past symptoms, the fact that he said, you know, book me a flight Friday morning and I'll hope to get on it, tells you how badly he wanted to be at this game. And that's what they did. The rest of the team went without him yesterday, and they booked him a flight this morning, and he wasn't able to make it.
How much of an impact do you think that'll have?
You know, you think of Dave Dickinson, who before he was on the sidelines as the head coach, was the offensive coordinator. And I just think that his relationship with Bo Levi Mitchell is kind of special. I mean, he was there when Bo showed up, right? And I'm trying to think, has Bo Levi Mitchell ever played a game that Dave Dickinson wasn't on his sideline? I would say no, he is not. So I'm gonna say that does matter. You know, like for a guy, when the only coach who's ever you've had taken direction from on the sideline is not present, at the very least, it's gonna be a very different experience for Bo Levi Mitchell.
Dave Naylor joins us. Dave, the Elks fans are curious. Well, my obvious comment of the day is they're not going to lose by 44 like they did on June 11th in BC. But that's about as far as I'll go on this game. I know the Elks. They're saying all the right things. We're coming off the bye week. We feel better. You know, everything like that. But I don't know what do you make of this Elks team and their chances Saturday night in BC?
You know, I think it's always interesting when you see a team play the same team a few weeks apart, and it was really lopsided, you know, either way in the first meeting, because that gives you a bit of sort of ability to measure. I don't think the BC Lions have dropped off at all. So the question is, have the Edmonton Elks closed the gap? And that's where I think, you know, the question comes. And it's not all on the defense, because we know part of it is, you know, keeping the football away from Nathan Rourke and the BC Lions offense, you know, which they didn't do very well that last time.
No.
And I couldn't tell you how many guys played in that game on defense for Edmonton that are not around, but there are a few of them, right? So that's one thing that I think we all understood, that this season for Edmonton was going to be, at least the first half, was probably going to be like an extended training camp in terms of evaluation. I mean, there's just so much to evaluate in Edmonton. The training camp is short in the CFL. You've only got two preseason games, that this was going to continue on. Look, all that said, I think you see the year two development in two quarterbacks in this league right now. You know, Caleb Evans of Ottawa, who led them to a win over Toronto last weekend. They won by 10. And then what we're seeing in Taylor Cornelius. I mean, he doesn't look like the guy from last year. You know, he looks a lot better. And I think that's the key when you're looking for development of CFL quarterbacks. In year one, I mean, you know, guys have got so much to process and learn, especially in the circumstances, you know, that some of them enter the league, you know, with somebody getting hurt in front of them or benched in front of them, and suddenly you're up. And now you look at what you see in Taylor Cornelius. I mean, he's been decent. And I think that's, you know, another thing that changes the dynamic in this game. If they can possess the ball as they have a little more over the last couple of weeks since that BC game, just that alone, limiting the opportunities that Nathan Rourke is going to get. And I'm sure Chris Jones is a guy who's probably watched that tape a few times and, you know, got some different people in there doing some different things, and they'll try and slow that offense down. But, boy, I tell you, BC is a very, very exciting story. And
oh,
look at
yes.
what they did last week at Saskatchewan, 28 straight points on the road at Regina. And I tell you, I said to somebody right before that game turned around, I said, you know, you watch this, because Nathan Rourke does not blink on the big stage, and he did not. He's something special.
The thing about Rourke, Dave, that, and I think it's very accurate what you bring up, here he is, you know what, young guy, and yeah. he, you know, he had obviously an unreal first week, and people are like, oh, yeah, but, you know, the Elks are terrible, and but BC's not that good. Yet he really hasn't, you know, he's had an off week, but everybody, heck, Tom Brady has an off week every now and then. Like, Nathan Rourke really hasn't shown much regression at all.
No, and even in the games, I'll tell you, when Winnipeg went in there and kind of shut him down, I didn't see that game live. You know, I just kind of saw the score, and it's like, okay, I'm going to go back and watch the game, watch the tape of the game, as I always do. And I sat down, and I guess I had it in my head that Nathan Rourke didn't have a very good game. But when I watched it, I mean, I watched him make a half dozen throws in that game that I'm not sure any other quarterback in the CFL can make. He was not, you know, light on big plays, even in that game where they got defeated. And, you know, I had an interesting experience. I mean, when we watched the games on the panel on the CFL and TSN, obviously we're thinking about what are we going to say at halftime, what are we going to say at postgame. You're trying to make your point, make it relevant, and line up with the video and all that. But the other interesting experience for me, and I did the Ottawa-BC game, I guess it was about 3 weeks ago, and I'm sitting with Milt Stegall to my left and Davis Sanchez to my right, both of whom know a little bit about the football being in the air in the Canadian Football League. And it was interesting for me just listening to them comment on things they saw from Nathan Rourke over the course of the game. Not things they said on television, things they said under their breath, or that they said, you know, to just for the guys on the panel, like, you know, just there was a lot of moments where they were completely, you know, in awe might be a little strong, but just really full of admiration for what Nathan Rourke can do and how he can do it. And it really went on for the entire 3 hours. I said that to Sanchez after. I said, you know, I got an even different appreciation for Nathan Rourke just sitting next to you guys and watching him for 3 hours, because the things that came out of your mouth, you know, over the course of that time. And he's a special player. And we keep talking about how his development has changed. And so much of it, I think, is him taking advantage of, you know, the pandemic season that didn't happen, the first team reps he got while Mike Riley was out. And the biggest stat that jumps out about this guy is his completion percentage. And yet in his college, his completion percentage was 58.7. And I talked to, you know, coach in the CFL who said, I didn't know if he'd translate, because, you know, in a two down league, you know, basically, you know, two downs and then punt, you got to have a higher completion percentage than 58.7. And that's been the biggest difference for him. I mean, his completion percentage has been historically high in the Canadian Football League, and he wasn't that guy in college. So one of the things about Nathan Rourke that has really fascinated me is that if you follow his history, every time he stepped up in class, there's never been a regression. You know, he was a high school star in Oakville, Ontario, who went for his final year of high school in Alabama, led them to a state AA champion and a 13-0 record. Then he goes to a JUCO, junior college in Kansas, and he's a conference all-star there. Then he goes to Ohio University. He becomes a starter in about three games, and he leads them to three consecutive bowl victories. Then he goes to BC, and he's doing what he's doing here. Most athletes, when they step up in class, you know, there's some point of adjustment. We talked about that earlier with CFL quarterbacks coming out of college. That's the thing that's amazing about Nathan Rourke, is how every time, you know, the competition around him is heightened, he has not taken very long to figure out and get on par and, in fact, excel.
Dave, oh, you know what? He is definitely somebody I'm looking forward to watching the game tomorrow night. We'll see how the Elks respond after a bye week. But more importantly, just the progression. The CFL, you always need some marquee play at the quarterback position.
Yep.
And you know what? You know, Fajardo's a younger quarterback, and, you know, he's got some, but you're starting to see a few more. There was always that cycle, but I really thought the CFL was, you know, like Mike Riley, and I don't have time, I want to get into it. Like, Mike Riley's kind of disappeared. I thought Mike Riley would maybe be someone you guys would use on the panel, to be honest, because he's so well-spoken. But, like, there's not really a big personality. Like, Zach Kolaris doesn't really have that, right? But Nathan Rourke, he's intriguing. Yeah, Bo's the closest.
We put him on the panel at Grey Cup last year, and I know that, you know, he impressed. I can say that. Certainly talking to people that you know, he left an impression. Bo's off social media, right? He's gone out for the last few years. But, you know, he's a guy who has, you know, lots of kind of – it's funny, you know, Rick Campbell told me that when he was talking about Nathan, and he said, you know, I'm not saying Nathan Rourke is Bo Levi Mitchell, but I'll tell you this. When Nathan showed up in the building in D.C., it felt a lot like when Bo showed up in the building in Calgary. So I would still say the bounce back season of Bo Levi Mitchell that we're seeing now puts him still as that, you know, alpha dog character among quarterbacks in the CFL.
Great stuff, Dave. Have yourself an awesome weekend. Enjoy the games.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.